So we've been talking through the book of Hebrews, and this week we're talking about Jesus being the better high priest. And there's a story in the Old Testament after a battle that Abraham had gone into and saved his nephew Lot from captivity. And then he's met by this mysterious character called Melchizedek. And there's just a little bitty section there in Genesis 14, I believe, and where Melchizedek comes and gives a blessing to Abraham, which shows that he is the greater of the two. And then Abraham turns and gives him a tenth. In fact, if I remember right also, that's the first place a tithe shows up in Scripture at all, where Abraham gives a tenth of what he has to Melchizedek. So the Hebrews writer gets into this a little bit, and he pulls from that. He also pulls from Psalm 110, where there's another passage in there about Melchizedek that's mentioned. And then also pulls from some things that he apparently knows from some other pieces of history or different things there. So we've got a big deal that happens there. And what happens is he talks about how, what does do Mel? All right. That's a big word. So we've got Mel. That Mel is greater than, there's a greater than sign, than, who did I just mention? Who? Abraham, yes. So we'll abbreviate Abraham. Abe. And then the argument that the Hebrews writer goes into from that then is that since he's greater than Abraham, Abraham was, what? You can't see the right, it's not dark enough? That's the best marker I got. I need to find like a super marker. I think the more I mark, the lighter it's getting. Because I'm marking over top of it, I think I'm erasing it. That's no better, is it? I think it just got lighter. So maybe I'll grab a different color for second service. It's just black markers don't last. I don't know why. Or at least mine don't. They go dead pretty quick. So how many can see this? How far back is that going? Should I continue? Okay, so we've got a few. We've got a few of you. It might just be that angle. So let me see if I can get that so that's not... Am I blinding you guys? Okay. Are you guys getting a glare, though? No. You are. All right. More that way, but if I go more that way, there's going to be some people that are going to get glared on. Better? Okay. I'd prefer to put it that way, but yeah, sometimes the lights will, and so we have, people are sitting in the right place now. We'll have to have no fly zones in here for second service. You can't sit here. So everybody can see it. So Melchizedek is greater than Abraham, and then he goes in this argument that Abraham, since he was father Abraham, and he was the father of all of the Israelites, the promise for Israel, the promise for the kingdom of Israel came to him. Then the Hebrews writer says, well, Abraham then is greater than the Levites, or Levi and the Levites. Does anybody know what the Levites were connected to? The priesthood. Excellent. So, and we'll just put HP for high priest and all the priests, period. So the high priest would come from Levi, and then all the other priests were Levites. So then the Hebrews writer goes into here and he says, well, Jesus, of course, is greater than Melchizedek, which means that Jesus is greater than Abraham. That's a big claim. I mean, a couple weeks ago he said Jesus was greater than or better than Moses. That was a big deal. The guy who wrote the first five books of the Bible, Moses rescued them from the land of Egypt, all the amazing things. So that was a big claim. Now he's saying he's greater than Father Abraham. And you think that would come first, but Moses actually did more than Abraham even did. So he's greater than Melchizedek, he's better than Abraham, he's better than Levi, better than all the high priests. So that makes Jesus, we'll do the GHP. A great high priest. Okay, and this happens in chapter 7, and he continues on through about chapter 9. This idea of Jesus being a high priest has been mentioned. Didn't hit a button. It was mentioned in 2, I wrote it on my cheat sheet there, 2:17. It's mentioned again. Actually, let's go and read that. We've got that slide here. So back in 2:17, for this reason, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful, what? High priest in service of God. Then this shows up again in chapter 3, verse 1. He makes another mention of this. This is fix your thoughts on Jesus. That's okay. 3:1. Therefore, holy brothers and sisters who share in this heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus. Remember that exhortation. Fix your thoughts on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle and high priest. Did I have verse 2 on that one too? I guess so. He was faithful to the one who appointed him, just as Moses was faithful in all God's house. So that was the comparison there with Moses. So it shows up in 2:17 and 3:1. Then he hits on in 4a through 5b. And then we've got that little, what we talked about last week. Okay, remember I'm kind of outlining this out because we got out of order a little bit to cover some subjects in their entirety. So he's mentioned it a couple times. Jesus is a high priest. He was made like us in every way, fully human, to be a better high priest. He was. We need to fix our thoughts on him as our apostle and our high priest. Then he dives into this subject that we're going to be coming back to this in just a moment. And he gets to a point and he says, we have much to share about this, which is kind of interesting. I didn't get into authorship a whole lot and all the different theories and different things on that. But the passage there that we covered last week is one of the interesting passages in Hebrews. There's a number of we passages which suggest that the author might not be a single person, but rather be coming from a group. So you've got some I passages. You've also got some we passages. And that was one of them that we looked at last week. Just little interesting little tidbits. So we have much to share with you about this, if you remember that from last week. But we can't because you're not trying to even understand it. You can't even get past the elementary truths of God. And so that's where he gets into this diversion that we talked about last week of you need to step it up. You need to mature. You need to continue growing. You need to move past these elementary truths of God because we've got some really awesome stuff to share with you. And then he breaks back down into this chapter 7 where he goes into a pretty complex little argument there about why Jesus is better than Melchizedek, than Abraham, and better than any of the high priests or priests that ever came through the Levitical priesthood. And so that's all really, really awesome stuff. But I want to make sure that we understand what's going on here. We won't get all the way to chapter 9 today. There's some of that that's going to be reserved for next week. So we were here last week. Now we're going back to this, and then we'll jump forward to this. Are you with me? I thought a visual might be a little easier to understand what was going on. So back in chapter 4, verse 14, this is where some of this journey starts. Therefore, since we have a great high priest, that's the GHP up there, who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. And there he is coming back to that idea. We need to hold firmly. We need to hold strong to this. Don't get bored. Don't stop trying and get apathetic. Don't fall away. And a big argument there throughout the book of Hebrews. You guys have seen it in a number of the messages so far in this series. So let us hold firmly to the faith that we profess, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weakness. He goes through the negative to show the positive. But we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Jesus was a great high priest because he met needs for us that no high priest ever could have met. As well as he did, and at the level that he did, the ways that he took care of us. And one of the things that he did, one of the needs that he met for us, was that he gave us help by being a great helper. Let's write that down. Jesus meets our need for help by being our perfect helper. And the word perfect is a key word in the passages today throughout this section. I'll just mention that a couple times. We won't be really focusing on that. But that is a key phrase in this section. And could also be considered a key phrase in the book of Hebrews, along with the word better that we talked about in the very first message. So the role of any spiritual leader is to help the growth of those who are being led, to help them to connect with God in a better way. And this was truth of the priests of old, the high priest. It's true of anyone that you'd see as a paid staff in a church today, or elders, or volunteers who are in leadership positions. It's true of any of you who share your faith with others, that your goal is in that is to bring them closer to God. It's true of every husband in here as they are charged with being the spiritual leader of their family. Their goal is being the spiritual leader of their family is to lead their family closer to God and help them in the places where they need help so that they can help to bridge that gap. Of course, Jesus trumps them all. Am I right? Can I still use that phrase? That phrase was a phrase before before this month happened. So I don't want to upset anybody or get any cheers on either side. That's a very emotional topic in our country right now. So I'm going back to the meaning of that word before. Jesus trumps all of that. Jesus is a better high priest because he's a better helper. No other high priest could help the way Jesus helps us. And it's very important for us to recognize that. One of the ways that he does that is he empathizes. He empathizes with our weaknesses because he was tempted in every way, we're told. Jesus empathizes with our weaknesses, not our rebellious attitude. Now, take a moment, kind of draw a line between those two things. Jesus experienced human weakness, but he never showed a rebellious spirit against God. Jesus experienced weaknesses in the face of sin, but there's a difference between having a weak heart and having a hard heart. The latter was not what Jesus experienced. Jesus did experience and share in our weakness, being fully human, entering into humanity. Jesus incarnate, God with us, Emmanuel, that term there we talk about around Christmas time. One of the commentaries that I use, simple little quote from that. Weakness grieves God. Hardness angers him. He will help the weak. He will expel the disobedient. The one he offers mercy and grace, to the other he promises harsh judgment. And this is why the writer of Hebrews expands on the severity of gaining a hardened heart or of drifting away from God. Those two different scenarios we find. We talked about that 2 weeks ago in the section back in here. We talked about it last week in this section here. And so he's kind of bookended this little part here where he started into the high priest discussion with those thoughts that, guys, he's going to help us in our weakness, but we need to make sure that we guard against a hard heart because that's not what he's going to help us with. In fact, it's kind of scary when you look into some of the biblical texts. God, in the Old Testament, he encouraged some of those. Well, not just in the Old Testament, in the Old Testament and the New Testament. You see it with Pharaoh, you see it with Judas. That God encouraged, he strengthened their rebellious heart, their desire to go against him. So he doesn't help that. He moves that towards punishment. But it's a weak heart. We need to understand that there's a difference. And we need to watch out for our hard heart. We need to make sure that we're seeking his help when we are weak for sure. Because it's that weakness that Jesus understands. He's both willing and able to help us when we are weak. A weak faith he will encourage. A weak faith he will strengthen. But when we lack faith, that's on us. Jesus is a better helper because his victories give us hope for victories in our struggles with sin. Jesus struggled with sin and he was victorious over his struggles with sin. I know I'm going to lose some of the battles I have with sin. I know I'm going to make some very stupid decisions and fall very short of God's glory many times in my life. However, that doesn't negate the reason or the idea of fixing my thoughts, fixing my eyes, as we're going to get to in Hebrews 12, to fix our thoughts, as we talked about in Hebrews 3, to fix our thoughts, to fix our eyes on Jesus, so that I can make the best decisions I can make, so that I can follow in his victories and know that I can be victorious if I follow in his footsteps, that I can succeed, I can mount up, I can be strengthened by him, and all of us should be able to have this confidence in Jesus' victories, that his victories give us reason to believe that we can have victories in our struggle with sin, because Jesus struggled just like we did. All I have to do is do it the way he did it, and I can succeed. And we see this in a lot of different areas. You see this in sports or in school where you have teachers, when you have a coach and they say, here's how you do it, and if you do it this way, you'll have victory, you'll succeed. If you don't, then I'll have you doing, you know, dives and rolls at the next practice in the rain or whatever. That was what we had to do in soccer. And so there are many different applications where you see that. I know I try to limit the Taekwondo references because they connect so well. But I remember when I was struggling with my first brick, an inch and a half cinder block, and breaking that, and I just thought it was impossible. And Master Beckman, my teacher, he set one up and he said, here, I'll show you. It can be done. And he broke it with ease. Of course, he's broken like 7 or 8 at one time. But he said, but that was important. That was more important to me than the 7 or 8 I'd seen him break before. Because he was saying specifically to me, look, it can be done. Watch me do it. Now all you have to do is do what I just did. And that's what we do with Jesus. We follow his example. Jesus came to earth. He said, watch what I do. Watch how I handle temptation. Watch how I handle struggling with sin. And you do what I do, and you can be victorious. And that's why he's a better high priest. He's a better helper because he can help us in those areas. And another reason he can help us is he gives us confidence. Not just confidence in helping to find victory with our struggle in sin, but he gives us confidence to come before God's throne. Verse 16 of chapter 4, he says, let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Because what Jesus has shown us about God's mercy, what Jesus has shown us about God's grace, we can feel confident to go to God and to pray to God and to seek his help in our time of need. Let's write this down. We can approach God with confidence. With confidence because of his grace. We have mercy and grace to help us in our time of need, is what that passage says. I don't think we lean on God as much as we should. I don't. I think we try to lean on ourselves until we just can't do it anymore. Then we lean on God. Then we turn to God. Say, well, I can't do it anymore. We get to this Jesus take the wheel moment in our life. He should have had the wheel long before that moment. So we need to lean on him more. We need to be in constant communication with God. We need to be in constant communion with God. Not just when we come and we gather around the table together and we share in this remembrance meal that Ryan spoke of and we all shared in. We need to be in constant communion with God, always in communion with him. Not just once a week, not just one time a week. We need to be in a constant connection with him. Because there's nothing better. There's nothing greater than God. And when the Hebrews writer is talking about Jesus is the great high priest, there's no one better. Even this mysterious character that shows up in the Old Testament, Melchizedek, who is better than Abraham, Jesus is better than he is. So why do we lean on so many other things? So many things that are, what is this? Less than. Why do we lean on so many things that are less than? Because you could go backwards through this list. And these are some great things to lean on. Father Abraham, he had some examples of not so great things. But he had some examples of great faith. And he's mentioned in Hebrews 11 when we get to that chapter. The Levites, the priesthood, they were selected for a reason. Because they were greater than some of the others. But even the great things in our life, when you put your faith in them, you're really settling for less than if your faith is not in God. We need to lean on him more often and really understand and take advantage of this, that Jesus has opened the door that we can confidently go to the throne of grace. Confidently go to the throne of grace in our time of need. We have the opportunity to approach God's throne of grace with confidence. But it's not just an opportunity. We have an invitation by God himself. Come. Come and approach the King. Come and approach the God of all of the universe. And come to me in your weakest moment. Come to me when you're struggling. Come to me with your heart that is most weakened. Come to me in those times. Not just in the times when you're high and mighty. Not just in the times when you have a lot of success. Not just in the times when you're the most holy that you've been in weeks. Come to me when you're struggling. Before it turns into a hard heart. Before it turns into you giving up or giving in. We need to take advantage of that. Why would we neglect such a great thing? He's taken away any excuse that we would have. He's holy. We are sinful. His answer? Mercy. He's perfect. We're flawed. His answer? Grace. He's perfectly strong. How would he ever understand what I'm going through in my weakness as a human? His answer? Jesus, God incarnate, comes to earth so that he can be the great high priest and say, you know what? I really do get it. I really do understand. I really do understand what you're going through. I understand what a weak heart can feel like. He was tempted in every way. None of us would ever be able to come close to experiencing the level of temptation that Jesus did. I mean, the little ones didn't sway him at all. They didn't make him cave. The medium ones, they couldn't cause him to weaken. The big ones couldn't get him to give in, and the huge ones didn't even overtake him. Some might think that he wasn't, you know, they might say, well, Jesus wasn't tempted to seek peace in substance abuse. Or maybe some would say that Jesus wasn't tempted to seek comfort in sexual immorality. Or some others might say that surely Jesus wasn't tempted with seeking self-worth by amassing a huge bank account. But just because we don't have on record each individual temptation that Jesus faced and experienced and was victorious in his struggle with, doesn't mean that he didn't suffer through those struggles. If you're going to get up to a level 10, you have to go through levels 1 through 9 first. We know of the level 10 temptations that Jesus went through and struggled with. Why would we assume that he didn't have to deal with levels 1 through 9 also? Jesus was victorious over sin. Because of God's grace and God's mercy, we are invited to, and we should, and we have the opportunity and the honor, and so we must go to God's throne of grace with confidence. And know that he's going to help us in our time of weakness. We need to just go to him and talk with him. You know, maybe some of you are here this morning. Maybe that's the simple challenge you needed to hear this morning. Maybe you haven't been connecting with God the way you should be. Maybe you haven't had that connection. You haven't been talking with him. You haven't been seeking him in your time of weakness. You've kind of put Jesus on this high priest level and forgotten that because he's the great high priest, one of the parts of that is that he can sympathize and empathize with our weakness. Let the Hebrews writer and let whatever words God brings through me this morning do something to move you and to encourage you and to motivate you to draw near to God, to draw close to God, because Jesus is our great high priest. To go to God specifically in our time of need, because he will help us. Help. Help means that we're already trying. Help means that he comes along and he assists us. So there needs to be some effort on our part. God is expecting that we are initially struggling, that we are fighting, that we are trying, to use a word from last week. That we're putting forth an effort, and in that effort, we know we can lean on God. He will help us, but that help comes with this pre-existing condition, if we want to use a popular word nowadays in a different format. that we have this pre-existing condition that we are struggling and we are trying and we are needing help. Because those are the times when you come along and you help somebody. Key word there in this passage. Jesus set the example of praying while we struggle. We need to go to the throne of grace with confidence. We need to pray to God and talk to God when we struggle. I think it's those times when we're least likely to talk to God, but those are the times we most need to go to God and talk to him. So when we're struggling in our sin, we're struggling with road rage, you know, or whatever it is that we struggle with, you know what your struggle is. Those times when we struggle the most are the times when we don't feel comfortable going to God and asking for his help because we feel most dirty. We feel most embarrassed. We feel most naked, like Adam and Eve in the garden. Hebrews writer says we need to go to the throne of grace with confidence in our time of need and seek him out. And Jesus showed us that. He said, here's how you do it. Here's how you're victorious. You talk to God. You keep in constant connection with him. Jesus was constantly getting away and talking to God. Jesus prayed to God in the midst of struggles that involved morality. He also talked with God about struggles that involved mortality. Not just in the physical struggle, but just in the struggle of being, or sorry, did I say physical? Not just in the spiritual struggle of sin, but also in the physical struggle of living in a fallen world, living around fallen people. The Hebrews writer alludes to Jesus' prayer in the garden before his crucifixion in verse 7 of chapter 5. He says, in the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. So even though he mentions that he spent time in prayer all the time, he goes to this very specific example of when Jesus was seeking rescue from his time of death. It could save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverent submission. So it says Jesus prayed and his prayer was heard. Is there anybody else that reads that and you go, really? Because didn't he still go to the cross? Didn't he still die? Wasn't that what he was praying and sweating so much that they were drops of blood falling over the stress? And he says, if there'd be any way, let this cup pass before me. The Hebrews writer says he prayed to the one who could save him from death. And because of his reverent submission, he was heard. Let me reassure you, church, that God did, in fact, rescue Jesus. God did, in fact, save Jesus from death. He did not save him from the cross, but he did save him from the grave. Amen? Isn't that the bigger of the two? Isn't that the bigger of the two? So listen, church, let's make a sticky connection here to every one of our lives and our souls this morning. If God is not rescuing you now, maybe he's waiting for something bigger to rescue you from, and you have to go through what you're going through now. Don't give up. Don't quit talking. Don't quit praying. And knowing in full assurance that he can and he will save you, he will rescue you. And maybe it's not coming. Maybe the cup that sits before you, it's not the cup of the cross, praise God. But maybe the cup that sits before you, he's thinking, that one you have to drink, but there's a bigger cup later that you're not going to have to drink. Don't lose faith, church. Maybe God's got bigger plans in mind. Whatever situation or circumstance you've been bringing to God constantly, and you've been thinking, you know, why isn't he doing anything? Doesn't the Bible say that I can approach the throne of grace with confidence in my time of need? Doesn't John say something about how if we ask anything in the name of Jesus, it will be given to us? Then why isn't God helping me out here? Why isn't God helping me through this situation? Why did he invite me to come and pray to him and I'm not seeing anything come from this? Maybe God's got a bigger rescue in mind. Let the cross and the grave be our example of that. He did not rescue Jesus from the cross. He did rescue Jesus from the grave. And guess what? God accomplished much more by rescuing him from the grave than he would have if he would have rescued him from the cross. We should all be very thankful that God rescued him from the grave and not the cross. We don't know what the bigger picture is in our life and what might come through our time of suffering or our time of weakness, that God might just be waiting for a better thing, a greater thing that's going to affect more people and be a better blessing to more. So hang in there. Let me encourage you this morning, hang in there and lean on God. Continue to lean on God if you have been leaning on him. If you haven't been leaning on him, you need to start. Let him be your strength and your encouragement. Lean on God for help. Verse 8, he says, the son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. Just wanted to hit on this passage because it can be a little confusing to read that and say, well, how did Jesus learn obedience? He learned obedience from what he suffered. This does not suggest that he did not know obedience to begin with. It doesn't suggest that he was disobedient and then when he suffered, he became obedient. There's a different way to learn. It was his obedience actually that led him to suffer, if you remember from Philippians, that he was obedient even to death on the cross. So his obedience led him to suffer. So he had obedience before the suffering. And then the Hebrews writer says he learned obedience through suffering. There's another way of learning. He learned not from disobedient to obedient. He learned through obedience. He learned through the victory of seeing what obedience does and coming out on the other side being victorious. He went to take a test on obedience and he got an A+. He didn't fail. He didn't come to the test not knowing what it was. And that's our high priest. That's who we go and we look to. Having learned through suffering, not the difference between disobedience and obedience, but rather learning the very depth of his obedience by not failing. And this is the example that we are to follow. That we are to find the encouragement and find. He was victorious in his obedience, even though he went through the ultimate suffering. And on the other side of that suffering, we all see the strength of his obedience. And we can be inspired by that. We can be connected to that. He's then the perfect example to us of what obedience is. Verse 9 and 10 as he continues. And once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. And was designated by God to be high priest in the order of Melchizedek. We have much to share with you about this, and that's where he kind of goes into his other thing here in a little bit. But right there in that passage we just read, he was the source of eternal salvation. He became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. Here's his example. Here's how he obeyed. Now it's our turn to follow in his footsteps and to obey him because he becomes the source of our eternal salvation. He goes into this reprimand, or actually right before he goes into the reprimand, verses 19 and 20 of chapter 6. We have this hope as an anchor. Actually, no, this is towards the end of that. We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. We read this last week. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the curtain where our forerunner Jesus has entered on our behalf. He has become a high priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. Jesus was better than Melchizedek. Therefore, he was better than Abraham. Therefore, he was better than the Levitical priesthood. Any high priest, any priest that ever existed in all of time in the Old Testament, Jesus is better than they are. And the main focus of this whole idea of Jesus being a better high priest, the top shelf focus, is mentioned right here in verse 20, that he was a forerunner. And he has become our high priest forever. That's one of the big reasons why he's a better high priest. He's not going anywhere. All these great things we've shared so far about Jesus, They're not changing. They're not disappearing. That's another huge way he meets our needs. He meets our needs of connecting with God by being our permanent high priest. By being our permanent high priest. Jesus remains our high priest forever. Verse 11 of chapter 7, it says, if perfection could have been attained through the Levitical priesthood, through this, and indeed the law given to the people established that priesthood, why was there still another priest to come, still need for another priest to come? One in the order of Melchizedek, not in the order of Aaron. So Melchizedek did not come from the Levites. And of course we know Jesus. What son did he come from? Not the Levites. Which one? Judah. Good job. Okay, so even Jesus, he didn't come from Levitical priesthood either. He came to bring us to a perfect state. The goal has always been redemption. The goal is always to be to restore us to the state that God had created us to be in the first place. To be in a state of perfectness with him, of holiness with him, of purity with him. And it could not be done through the law or the old covenant. We can't accomplish this on our own. I believe that's a lot of what the old covenant speaks to us, is you can't do this on your own. You need Jesus. We need Jesus, who was made perfect so that he could become our eternal source of salvation for those who obey him, to be a high priest for us forever. He replaces the priesthood of the old covenant, and he brings a new covenant with a new priesthood and a new law or expectation on God's people. That, as Chuck read, that was last week, that he places on our mind and on our heart now in this relationship we have with him. The former regulation is set aside because it was weak and useless, for the law made nothing perfect, and a better hope is introduced. Everyone say, better hope. That didn't sound better. We have a better hope. That's good news. Yes, we have a better hope. Is introduced by which we draw near to God. That's the goal, is to draw near. That goal has always been redemption. That goal has always been connectivity to God. And Jesus is a better high priest because he connects us to God by being a permanent high priest. Jesus has become the guarantor, I love that word, of a better covenant. In fact, that was going to be in your bulletin, but I pulled that out. Of a better covenant. There is a better covenant. Better covenant. Now, there have been many of those priests since death prevented them from continuing in office, but Jesus lives forever. He has a permanent priesthood. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him because he always lives to intercede for them. He can completely save us, completely, because he has a permanent priesthood. He will always be able to help us because he lives today. He will always be able to intercede for us because he lives today. He will always be able to inspire us to obey and to follow, even when we suffer, even in our times of weakness, because he suffered and he was weak and he chose to obey, and we can follow his example of victory. And we can do that. Why? Because he lives today. Because his victory through obedience was shown in the empty grave, to inspire our obedience to him, our perfect high priest. Such a high priest truly meets our needs. One who is holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners, exalted above the heavens. Unlike the other high priests, he does not need to offer sacrifices day after day. First for his own sins and then for the sins of the people. He sacrificed for their sins once for all when he offered himself. Write this down, and this is actually going to be our topic next week, is the great sacrifice. Jesus meets our need of a complete sacrifice and atonement. We'll be expounding on that next week. Just some quick thoughts before we get out of here. It's all this better all this better that we wrote down, whatever notes you took in addition to what was in the bulletin, all this understanding, all this better, it's not better if you don't put into practice what you know. It's not better, let's write that down. It's not better if you don't put into practice what you know. If you know that he can help you, but you don't turn to him for help, then it doesn't matter if it's better or not, because you're not experiencing better. And you might hear that things are better and wonder why things aren't better for you. And if you're not putting them into practice, then it's not going to be better. You're not going to experience better. If you know that he better connects you to God, and that's a great function of Jesus as our great high priest, he better connects us to God, but if you're not connecting with God, then it's not better for you. Even though it's better and better is offered, it's not better if we don't put into practice what we know. If we know that he is a better sacrifice, that he completely saves, but we aren't repentant when we fall short, and we're not grateful every time we gather around the Lord's table, every time we realize the power of God's grace and mercy acting on my life to save me, then why is it going to be better for you if you're not acting that way? It's only going to be better. It's only going to be a better sacrifice when we are acknowledging it, when we are connecting with it. Another thought is that we are God's holy priesthood. We are God's holy priesthood now. So our lives should reflect the actions of our high priest. In the New Testament, we are called the holy priesthood. The church is the new priesthood. Not certain individuals, not paid staff, not elders, not leaders in the church. Everyone, a Christian, is part of the priesthood now. And so as Jesus meets our needs by being a better helper to us, as we are little Jesus's, little Christ, that's what Christian means, as we are a part of the priesthood of believers under the high priest, we should be helping others, shouldn't we? We should be helping each other. I mean, we can definitely empathize with each other's weaknesses, can't we? And share with each other in that way. We can encourage each other with our victories, just as Jesus has encouraged us with his victory. We can encourage each other to go to God and approach his throne of grace with confidence, because I'm approaching his grace, or his throne of grace, with confidence. Jesus meets our need of connecting with God by being our permanent high priest. And we're not the high priest, but we are part of the priesthood. Can't we help reflect Jesus' action as the great high priest in helping other people to connect to God, to helping each other connect to God? Jesus meets our need of atonement through this complete sacrifice. We can't make that sacrifice, but we can make sacrifices. We can sacrifice some time. We can sacrifice some of our abilities, some of our skills. We can sacrifice some of our money to help make someone's life better. And so we follow in the footsteps of our great high priest as we are now the priesthood of believers. Our great high priest, pray with me. Father, we thank you so much.